So you've done inner child work, but have you really? I thought I did until my abandonment wounds came back and completely kicked my ass. So shit shows, I want to hit you with three quick truth bombs about inner child work that I've come to learn the hard way. Okay, so number one, you can't reparent yourself from the neck up. You can't think your way into safety. If your body still feels tense, reactive, or numb, that's your inner child telling you the work hasn't reached them yet. Number two, talking to your inner child isn't enough. You have to feel what they felt. And number three, reparenting has to be somatic to actually work. Safety isn't something you say, it's something you practice. And that is what breathwork gives us, a felt sense of safety the younger you never got to experience. And that is exactly why I'm offering Breathe to Heal, a somatic journey to reclaim your inner child. It is a 6-week course starting on August 13th, run by fellow shit show and somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, where we are combining breathwork, somatic practices, parts work, and community healing at the steal of the cost of most somatic courses, let me add. Spots are limited. Don't sleep on this shit. Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. Trust me, this is the work that actually works.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Coverage varies by plan, view contracts, and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If your car is out of warranty, one major repair bill could wipe you out. Just ask Ludacris.
Car breakdowns can wreck your wallet. Without endurance, a worn-out timing belt could cost you $1,700. A busted transmission? That's $4,000 easy. An engine meltdown? $7,000. But if you've got endurance, you could never pay out of pocket for a car repair again. With endurance, your car's most expensive parts are covered. Plus, you pick the mechanic you trust to do the work. With endurance, your rate stays the same no matter how many claims you file.
If your car is under 20 years old, Endurance has you covered with unlimited miles. Plus, your plan includes 24/7 roadside assistance anywhere in the country.
So who's going to pay for your next breakdown? You or Endurance?
Choose the name Ludacris trusts. Endurance. Right now, get $300 off any plan, plus a year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free. All backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your free quote at endurancewarranty.com. That's endurancewarranty.com.
And let's talk about anger. Reclaiming anger, the emotion that was never safe to feel. If you grew up in a dysfunctional family, chances are you were never given a healthy relationship to anger. Maybe it scared you. Maybe it got you in trouble. Maybe it made people disappear. So you learned to suppress it, judge it, or only let it leak out sideways. Because when anger was met with fear, punishment, or abandonment, you didn't just lose your voice, you lost your right to your own hurt. Lies we learned about anger. Anger is dangerous. We were taught it leads to explosions, rejection, or punishment. So we learned to fear it instead of feel it. Anger means you're out of control. If you expressed it, you were too much, crazy, or the problem. So you started controlling yourself to make others comfortable. Anger makes you unlovable. We got the message that love was only safe when we were agreeable or quiet, so we stuffed our truth to stay connected. Anger means you're just like them. Many of us fear becoming the parent who used anger to dominate or hurt, so we overcorrected, shutting down instead of speaking up. Good kids don't get angry. Being easy or well-behaved was how we stayed safe or earned love. Anger didn't fit that role, so it got buried. Anger pushes people away. We watched people shut down, walk out, or retaliate when emotions run high. So we decided that expressing anger meant losing connection. Anger makes you the problem. When we spoke up, we got blamed for the rupture. So we learned to stay silent, to keep the peace, even if it costs us ourselves. The truth about anger. Anger isn't the enemy, it's a messenger. It shows up when something's been crossed, lost, or violated. It's your nervous system calling for protection. Your body saying something isn't right here. It's not always loud. Sometimes it's a lump in your throat, the tension in your jaw, the tears that come out sideways. Anger doesn't mean you're broken. It means something mattered, something hurt, and that pain deserves a voice. When anger is honored, not fear, it becomes a guide. It helps us reclaim what was taken, clarify our boundaries, and finally name the things we were never allowed to say. It's not about lashing out or getting stuck in blame. It's about making sense for the parts of you that were told to stay small, quiet, agreeable. Healing doesn't mean you never feel anger. It means you stop abandoning yourself when it rises. So some questions are, what were you taught about anger growing up? What's your relationship like with anger today? And what's one moment you now realize should have made you angry but didn't? Anger's always been just, I've never been a rager. Anger has just never, it's an emotion I think I don't feel comfortable feeling because it's so all-consuming. Like it just feels very overwhelming and like there's like a lack of control element there. And so I don't get angry that often. But, you know, when I was thinking about this before group, you know, I was, what is this rooted in? Because I was never told I couldn't be angry. I don't remember having experiences as a kid where I got angry and I was punished or told to shut up. I remember having these meltdowns as a kid, like whenever I would get really disappointed by something. Like I remember this one time, I was probably like 8 or so, and I got spotted at the mall, like asked if I wanted to go to this modeling thing. And I remember I went and they didn't move forward with me. And I just remember being in the backseat of the car and just freaking out and just banging on the back of my mom's like head thing in the car. But I think that was probably a lot of repressed anger that I wasn't expressing related to other things that were going on that was coming out sideways. But I was thinking about how, for me, I think that the connection between the struggle to express anger is really rooted in a feeling of unworthiness, like not feeling worthy enough to be angry. And so I asked my favorite therapist, ChatGPT, about like that, like this, can you speak to this connection between the difficulty in expressing anger and not feeling worthy enough to? And it said, absolutely. It says repressed anger equals repressed worth. When you grow up in an environment where your anger was ignored, punished, or made to feel dangerous, you learned that your emotional needs are inconvenient and that you don't have the right to take up that kind of space. Anger is a boundary emotion. It rises when something feels wrong or unfair. But if you were made to feel like you were the problem, you may have internalized the belief, I don't have the right to be angry because I don't matter enough to be protected. Unworthiness teaches compliance, not confrontation. Unexpressed anger often comes from a survival adaptation of, if I express this, I'll be rejected or abandoned. If I get mad, I'll lose the little connection that I have. If I show my true feelings, I'll be seen as bad or broken. It's not that you don't feel anger. It's that you learned that you're not worthy of expressing it. And so that really like resonated hardcore for me. And, you know, I had something come up. It was really interesting, the timing of it all, because with this guy canceling the second date on me, and I talked about this on Thursday about how it really brought up a lot of these feelings of feeling really unfair. And it's interesting because it kind of correlated with, at the beginning of last week, I got a text message from Lee, who is like my dad's business partner. And he reached out to me and said that he had talked to my dad and that my dad mentioned that he hadn't talked to me in a long time and that my dad seemed really sad about it. And he was like wanting to know if there's anything that he can do to like help bridge things and start up communication again. And I'm like, you realize that we haven't talked because he told me that he's done with me. And he's like, yeah, I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do. And I'm like, why? So he can just do it to me again in a few months for like the 10th time. And so it's like, oh, my poor dad, like, oh, it's so sad. You're so sad that you haven't talked to your daughter. Like, fuck you. And, you know, I was visiting this in my therapy last week and this feeling of things being really feeling really unfair with like this dating situation too. And what it brought me to was that moment when I was in the fourth grade and I walked into class and a kid came up to me and was like, CJ told me that your dad said that you sleep in your mom's bed every night. And my dad had played tennis with CJ's dad the night before and was like so exhausted. I'm sure he was so tired because, you know, I kept waking up in the middle of the night and wanting to sleep in my parents' bed. And so it's like, yet again, like, oh, like, woe is you. Poor you. You have a daughter that has separation anxiety and can't sleep in her own bed. And oh, poor you. You haven't talked to your daughter. And man, I just got to tell him off. And there's a lot of repressed anger in there. I think that most of me feels worthy now to feel it, but it's still an emotion that makes me really uncomfortable. Again, it feels I'm just going to lose control and that I'm not going to be able to reel it back in. So I've been trying to do a lot of screaming into pillows. I really need to get like a punching bag or something. Then I'll probably like break my fingers or something like that. But I know that there's still like tons of repressed anger for me. It's easier for me to go to sadness than it is for me to go to anger. It's much easier for me to go to anxiety than it is for me to go to anger. It's much easier for me to go to shame than it is for anger. So go ahead, Terry.
No, I am very much not like you in this regard, Ashley. Andrea, I am no stranger to anger. In my family, because I was a scapegoat child, I was continuously provoked into a state of anger because it allowed my family to point the finger at me and say that I was the problem. From the reading, it says, anger makes you the problem. When we speak up, we got blamed for the rupture, so we learned to stay silent and keep the peace. No, fuck no, I did not keep the peace at all. I took the bait and I went full on with the anger. I would scream, I would shout, I would smash things, I would play loud, angry music. And I left home at 18, believing that I was just inherently an angry person. Anger is my go-to response when I'm emotionally dysregulated. Or it used to be. It's fading now as I'm healing. But it's taken me decades to truly understand that the anger that I have felt is masking something else. If we look at it from an IFS perspective, that anger is my protector. It's protecting me from things that I, from hurt and loneliness and a sense of injustice and sadness, because my needs as a child and as a teenager were not met by my family. I rightfully am angry at my family. They have given me good reason to feel genuine anger towards them. I was actually working with ChatGPT as an IFS therapist today, and it questioned me to think about what needs were not met for me as a child and as a teenager. And what occurred to me is that I wanted to be loved, but there was no part of me which wished that it was my parents or my family which would provide that love for me. I think I had so little emotional connection or emotional bonding with anyone in my family that the very thought of receiving love from them just makes me feel repulsed. It just makes me want to push away completely. Which is why I think as a teenager, I was always so romantically focused. I wasn't chasing like losing my virginity. I was fantasizing about having a serious partnership with someone. My anger has come out a lot in my adult life. It's come out in my romantic relationships. If I feel like I'm not being listened to, if my needs aren't being met, if I feel like I'm being abandoned by my partner, it will express itself as anger. And I know fully that that scares the crap out of my partners and anyone who happens to witness it. And so after I have a period of dysregulation and I've expressed anger, I'm always overcome with this huge, profound weight of shame. And I'm learning now that I understand where this anger comes from and that it's a protective part of me, a protector part that's protecting my exiles. I'm learning to give it grace. I'm learning to forgive it. I'm learning to thank it and recognize that it was there to help me hold on to my sense of self, to help me hold on to my dignity, and to just get me through the teenage years until I could leave my family home. Some of the rage fits I've had have been absolutely terrifying to me as well, not just people who might have been around who have seen them, but to me. The guttural screams that come out of my mouth from deep inside of my chest and smashing objects and slamming doors, it terrifies me because I genuinely don't believe that that is me. I believe that I am a calm, rational, loving person, and I'm so thankful that my rage has never led me to hurt someone physically. That is the one thing that I'm so, so proud of, that I've always been able to hold back and I've never hurt anyone physically. And I'm so, so proud of myself for that. There is some sense of control there that I have over this rage. But I haven't had one of these extreme rage attacks for about 2 years now. So something is working. Something is shifting. I'm starting to connect with the protector part and have some sort of dialogue with it, which is letting it kind of take a back seat and let myself take control of how I respond in situations. So yeah, this is definitely fully a huge topic for me. I separated from my most recent partner and I'm still living with him. And earlier this year, when we were having a bit of a heart-to-heart over the kitchen table, he described me, and he described me as a calm person. And that was such a welcome thing to hear, because he's been on the receiving end of my rage attacks. And for him to recognize that those attacks are not me, they're a trigger, they're a protective response, means a huge amount to me. So yeah, I'll leave it there. I'm really looking forward to everyone else's shares on this topic. Thanks so much, everyone.
Hello, everybody. Happy Sunday. This is where I put in my book plug for the book that started me on my anger journey. A little while ago, Facing the Fire by John Lee was a really great deep dive on both unrepressed anger and repressed anger and like how it works in the body. So if you really want to like go deep in it, that book was really helpful for me. I've been on a journey with anger for probably the last couple of years because I've never been able to access it and like feel it. And I don't identify as an angry person. And as I'm sitting here, like there are some wires that are connecting and some like recognition that's happening that I don't know, I'm kind of seeing my anger more clearly. As a child, I used to rage at like the injustices of my household, and I'd call shit out for when things weren't fair, and I would get in trouble for it. And that would result in either like getting hit or yelled at or sent away or whatever it is. And I think that's kind of how I see anger, is the experience of like having it pushed onto me and then me having to like kind of shove it down. But a lot of how I reacted when I stopped lashing out and calling people out on their shit was just, I would go into my room and I would clean until I pass out, just like productive energy of getting things done. And as I think about kind of how I've seen myself across my life, starting probably in my teenage years when I just stopped getting angry about stuff, I just stopped identifying as being angry, but I got a lot of shit done. I was very good at accomplishing things and achieving goals and like pushing myself. And it got to a point where a couple of years ago, I hit the kind of the finish line of like, I've achieved everything that I thought I ever really wanted to achieve in life because it all seemed so out of reach. And I kept trying to go and I just kind of burn out. And I've been in this space of having to really like hone in on when I want to get something done, I have to work with myself to start making that happen. And I think for me, just recognizing that my anger has never been about like hitting or yelling or any of that. It's, I'm seeing like a kid riding off on his bike, turning backwards and throwing the bird at someone like, haha, fuck you, watch this. And it makes me laugh a little bit because whenever I do get really angry, I get almost like sinister in that I will say exactly everything that I think about you and I'll make sure that it cuts to your soul. And so I guess for me, it's understanding and recognizing the flavor of anger that comes up and connecting with that part of me and acknowledging it and letting go of the idea that maybe I'm not an angry person, because I do have a lot of anger and I have had to use anger a lot in my life. And I think part of this journey is letting go of the way that we view ourselves in the context of how we've had to define ourselves to survive. And I think telling myself for so many years that I'm not an angry person, I'm someone that doesn't get angry easily, was a coping mechanism and a survival strategy for being around other people who cannot control their anger or like use it in an effective way. And so I think just sitting here now and like 5 minutes ago, having that aha of like, oh, I'm not like a raging dude. I'm just like the little punk kid that's like, haha, fuck you, watch this. And I've done a whole lot of that in my life. So I've probably been a fairly angry person, which is kind of cool to see, I guess, if you ascribe to all emotions being kind of equal and useful. So that's like a nice aha for this moment. I did not expect to come into this meeting walking away with like a better sense of self. I think that's all I have. Thank you for listening.
So I could relate to what people were saying around like not identifying with being an angry person like in the past. But the longer I've been on a recovery journey, I realize that I am quite angry and maybe I just don't share it or I haven't shared it or haven't felt safe enough to share it. And I have been doing a lot of internal work and I've been using AI, ChatGPT, to do some of it as well. And one thing I've kind of uncovered is this bitter jester part of me, or like a humorous part that's really, really, really cynical and sarcastic. And it really came out with my mom, where I was really triggered and hurt. And I was literally saying, fuck this family. I don't want to be in this family. I hate everybody. And she was responding back to me, haha, me too. And I was like, so serious though. And she thought I was being kidding. And I'm always sarcastic. So she thought I was just joking. And I was like, no, you don't understand, mom. I like don't belong here. I don't want to be a part of this. I can't be myself. I don't belong. Like, you don't understand. I really, really, really don't want to go. And this was around Easter. I was like, I don't want to go to Easter this year. I never want to go again. Like, I don't care anymore. And so that really was eye-opening to me. I was like, I have a lot of stuff inside that I just don't say or don't feel like I can say. And then it was my belly button birthday on Friday, and my mom texted me and was like, hey, love you, proud of you, let's do our nails and blah blah blah. And for some reason, like, I a lot of times I have a very big attitude of I didn't ask to be born. Like, that's just how I feel in my head. And like, I'm trying to work on being more happy to be alive and gratitude. And like, it's getting better all the time as I like practice it and meditate and do the stuff. And, you know, like, I'm really, really working on it. But I was feeling kind of gooey and tender. And I texted her a vulnerable thing, which I regretted right away. And I was like, hey, thanks for giving me life. And she was like, it was the best thing I ever did. And I was just like, and it made me feel so uncomfortable. And then a little bit later, she posted on Facebook and was like, happy birthday to the one who made me a mom. You raised me as much as I raised you, honestly. I love you and I'm so proud of you and blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't like that she put that on Facebook, like, let alone that we haven't really ever talked about that. I was like, that's like talking about being parentified online or whatever. And I just didn't like it. And so I feel like I didn't express any of the emotions around it or anything. But, and I was like kind of fine-ish. And then I could just tell like how triggered I was, because like my day was pretty good. The next day was pretty good. And then last night I was just going to rest a little bit on the couch before bed. And as soon as I closed my eyes, my husband went in the other room. And like, he left the room and I was like, oh my God, he was just waiting for me to go to sleep. And he just wants to get rid of me. And he wants to be able to do his own thing. And I'm getting in the way of what he'd rather do. Everybody just doesn't want me around. And I knew immediately, I don't know if that really makes sense, but like, well, it's irrational, but I just felt like when I took a nap or when I was laying down and he went in the other room, he was abandoning me, which is totally irrational and doesn't make any sense. But anyway, like starting to realize, okay, this is a trigger. This has nothing to do with him. I was able to tell him that in the moment and be like, hey, I'm so sorry. This has nothing to do with you. You're totally in the right. You're able to go do whatever you want. I'm so sorry. And I was able to just like really cry and be sad about the inner child version of me that was never tended to and stuff. So I didn't like that it happened and I felt bad and I felt embarrassed that it was an overreaction to the situation. But I also felt really good that I could like really cry hard for the little girl that didn't ever get taken care of, especially right before bed. I always remember being alone right before bed or watching TV by myself. And I just be like, where are my parents? Like, where is everybody? So anyway, sorry, I've talked long enough, but it was just, I know birthdays are always like shitty anyway. I probably, maybe not for everyone, but I mean, for me. So I'm working on just being more grateful and working through this stuff, but I really appreciate being able to share. I feel like I'm so raw and new still, and it's just been a lot. So thank you guys.
For the longest time, anger was always sort of an unsafe emotion that through both of my parents, my mom would sort of blow up and destroy relationships, sort of like the soul-cutting words, comments that we talked about earlier. And, you know, if you crossed my mother, she would say things that would sort of end it is in terms of relationships. But my dad was a little bit more sinister, that his anger turned into manipulation. And turned into doing manipulative things that were incredibly cutting and incredibly damaging, like canceling a birthday party. Or when he got mad at my mom once, he called the bar where my mom's boyfriend was to say that my mom was in trouble. And then her boyfriend broke into our house because he was under the assumption that there was going to be, you know, that my mom was in trouble. And then it came out later that my dad used that as an opportunity to inform my mother that he was always watching. So it's kind of like that's really screwed up. But I don't feel like I really had a relationship with anger, that I was always the good kid. And it sort of became this situation that through, you know, I was always carrying this with me for 25 years of my life. There was a significant portion of anger baggage that was sort of dragging around like a backpack full of rocks. And it sort of came out during an IFS session with my therapist, where we were finding parts and naming parts. And my therapist said to me, "It sounds like you're angry. And what do you feel about that?" And I didn't really know how to react to that because it was not a safe emotion to sort of work through. But it You know, I think I posted in the group chat a couple of months ago this sort of anger epics where he wanted me to write down every single thing I was mad about for my whole life. And, you know, there's 40 some years of anger or cataloged there. But doing that exercise and then getting a punching bag were two things that were really helpful in sort of embodying that anger and sort of working through some of those things. But, you know, the sort of loop that I was thinking through in some of these things and looking back at my journal, you know, sadness leads to anger. Anger in my world sort of leads to repression. Repression sort of turned into two things. It sort of came out as sort of a positive thing in being the drive to sort of set my life on the path that I wanted to, but it sort of created this angst or this sense of anxiety that was sometimes a little bit crippling in terms of all of these other sorts of things. But I don't know, I feel better having a conscious relationship with it as opposed to unconscious, and sort of in the whole realm of things, knowing that I don't want to be like my parents in terms of the relationship with anger, I feel in a much better place now. But holy crap, was that a big revelation back in February when these things sort of came out like that. But great topic today, and thanks for giving me a few minutes to share.
Coverage varies by plan, view contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If your car is out of warranty, one major repair bill could wipe you out. Just ask Ludicrous.
Car breakdowns can wreck your wallet. Without endurance, a worn-out timing belt could cost you $1,700. A busted transmission? That's $4,000 easy. An engine meltdown? $7,000. But if you've got endurance, you could never pay out of pocket for a car repair again. With endurance, your car's most expensive parts are covered. Plus, you pick the mechanic you trust to do the work. With endurance, your rate stays the same no matter how many claims you file.
If your car is under 20 years old, Endurance has you covered with unlimited miles. Plus, your plan includes 24/7 roadside assistance anywhere in the country.
So who's going to pay for your next breakdown? You or Endurance?
Choose the name Ludacris trusts. Endurance. Right now, get $300 off any plan, plus a year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free. All backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your free quote at endurancewarranty.com. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Thanks, everybody, for your shares. This is fast becoming a place that I need to be, because I just need safety. I need safety. I'm about almost 4 months into this journey, and it's proving to be just, my insides are collapsing, basically. That's what I feel like. Like, my grandkids have these little magnetized things that you can build houses with. And all you have to do is move one and one falls, and they just collapse very easily. And that's visually what I feel like is happening inside me, in a good way. It's not like, oh my God, I'm falling apart and I'm not going to be able to do anything. And my commitment to work grows as I fall apart, which is real progress for me, because as a young person who was falling apart on a regular basis, I didn't work, and I just collapsed inside my brain and just stayed there. I actually made a t-shirt at one point of a little being that was me, and I was sleeping in my brain, and it was like my favorite place to be. But this topic, I've had a very physical reaction to this topic, and listening to people, my stomach is in a little bit of a knot. And I think that's the small kid, the small part of who couldn't get angry. I wasn't allowed to get angry. When I came home, I was about 6 or 7, and I came home from playing outside. I was the youngest of 6. My next brother was the person that I played with, because I was 6 and he was 7.5 or 8. And I didn't have other people to play with. I didn't have anybody. And he, a couple of times, I don't know how many times, would have me pull my pants down in front of this other little boy in the neighborhood. And it was scary and frightening and all that stuff that kind of stuff is. And I would go home. I would go running home up the hill to my house. My mother would be inside ironing, and I would go in and tell her what happened. And she would get mad at me. And she said, well, stay away from him then. And I would be like, well, wait a minute. Wait, I didn't do anything. I'm just like, I didn't do anything. And but she would be mad at me, and I would end up going in my room and hiding. There was no place to get angry. There was no place to get scared. There was no place to get anything. And then when he came home, she would yell at him, and then it would start, you know, then wait till your father gets home. And then my father would come home, and the belt would come out. And so, you know, there was no space for anger. And that, you know, I kind of wrote out, I'm a very visual person. I'm very visual, and have been drawing this crowd that lives inside me for a few years now. The words, I'm starting to lose words. I'm just having visuals but I have to chart out a lot of this, you know. And anger was like, I was a numb little kid. Then when I had my own kids, I remember very specific instances of raging on my children, because that's what you do to kids. You don't listen to their voice. You rage at them. So it was done to me. I did it to my kids. It horrifies me. Now my kids are adults. Two of them are young 20s. One is going to be 35 in September. And every day that we're able to have conversations and talk about this kind of stuff, because I show up for them and I'm here for them as a recovering person. I've been on the receiving end of some tough conversations, but I'm willing to be there. I said to my younger son the other day, he told me, Mom, the people who work with me really like me. And I said, well, of course they do. And he looked at me and he said, why couldn't you have talked to me like that when I was 8? And I was like, ouch. Like, I'm glad he can say it. But ouch. But so I went from a numb little kid to a righteously angry parent, who, that's how you communicate with kids, because they should be seen and not heard, to divorcing the bully, narcissistic bully that I was married to, who I never got angry at anything he said. I just tried harder to please him. So I have this fucked up relationship, and I am numb over angry. I'm numb over depression. I'm numb to most of this. I did have a scream session with my therapist when I was sitting in her office. In July, it'll be 5 years since he left. And at one point, about, I don't know, 2.5 years ago, I was in her office talking about it. And I just kind of mumbled. And at the end of saying something, I said, I fucking hate him. And she said, okay. She said, it's time. We're going to have a scream session. And so I wrote a letter, and it turned out the building that her office is in has rooms for scream sessions in the basement. Like, it's a building from a long time ago when they actually did scream therapy. It's kind of a regular thing. So it has these little rooms where you can go in and scream and no one can hear you. And so I was able to do that. And at a point felt like I was, you know, like it was almost like a rebirth, that I was able to just like blow out this, you know. But it's a tough one for me. I'm happy to be on this and hear people talk about it, because it's just such a fucked up part, you know, that I it's a mix. It's just this mix of, yeah, it's okay to get angry. People get angry. But my dog doesn't like that I might be getting angry, though. It's hard to touch, but then it can be right there. And I don't want to add to my amends list, as a sponsor used to say to me. So I'm very careful. But in this space, I can say all this. And one thing I've learned from this recovery so far is the things that happen have a rollout. This meeting is not an isolated experience for me. Talking in this meeting allows me to move forward in ways that I can't see yet. So, yeah. So thanks for giving me the space. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So yeah, anger. You know, I wish I would have been here for the whole meeting, because I love what I've heard, and apropos as always, and uncomfortable, because my relationship to the anger I experienced is based on my childhood. And that was, you know, your dad is angry. Your dad's an angry person. Don't be like your dad. Literally, I would get that message like all the time. Literally, like, don't be like your dad. So basically, don't be he's 50% of your DNA, and he's the person you model every fucking day. Like, but don't be like him, you know, like, I don't know. But the messaging of anger is complex for me. And also, I was supposed to be like this balance of the force kind of thing, where my brother and dad could be, they're angry. They're like, you know, volatile, but you know, you're like, we need you to be calm. We need you to be this good natured, even killed, peaceful kind of presence. We need that, you know, in this dynamic. And so again, I just repressed the anger. And now it's like, I'm rageful. That's the thing too, like hearing that, like, I am an angry person, or I am rageful. I'm like identified as like this angry and rageful, just fucking Hulk mode any given moment. But it's like, no, anger is a core emotion, you know, it's primary. It's like, we need it. I need it in theory, but like, I don't know. It's like, I look at it, my thing is like there's only so much internal space I have, it seems. And like, if it's taken up with a lot of bullshit or just stress or whatever, like, I don't have room for that. The relationship to that anger, there's not much wiggle room. It's like a right, you know, there's a lot of friction. So I see how it's like related to other stuff. It's like, my life's been so stressful the past few months. I haven't had space, it seems, because I'm just preoccupied with, well, a lot of it's anxiety, but just preoccupied that I can't like emotionally regulate. So I'll like get in the anger and like react from it. And sometimes it's cathartic, though. Like, it feels like, oh, that was so good to get that out. It's like, oh, fuck, that was like relieving. And we don't have a rage room here anymore, but that kind of stuff's helpful to, like, people are saying scream and do stuff like that. But I don't know. It's like, what's a healthy way to, I need like a consistent way to do it, to like release it, you know? There's just a lot in it that turns into repression. It comes out in fucked up ways. But I'm in that thing with like meditation and Buddhist practice of like, just basically, it can be suppressing. It's hard to access anger, like when you're fucking like in it. It's like, okay, now I'm feeling this anger. So that feels in my body, being mindful of the anger, but like, I'm afraid of it. You know what I mean? I'm afraid of my anger. And I'm complexly working through in therapy, and that it's really uncomfortable most of the time. But it's becoming aware of it is the first step. And I guess that's it. Thanks, y'all.
So growing up, my dad would hit my older brother and sister if they were not doing well in school. And so that's like a keystone memory. But I just remember thinking, like, that's so fucking dumb. Like, why are you hitting people for not knowing how to do shit? Like, that just seemed so just dumb to me. And so I married an anger guy. So we literally just had this conversation before he left. And I kind of want to share, or I want to share here, because when I talk to people in my just life, there's always this wanting to take one side or the other, or like he's a dick or, you know, whatever. So I am not a clean person. I am actually quite a slob. And I came home a week ago and just fucking dumped all my dirty laundry in our bedroom. And then I just basically, oh, and I broke some shit by accident, but I just kind of just, if a trauma dump could have like a visual, that would be what I did to the house. And then I peaced out and hung out with my friend for the rest of the night. And he was pissed, rightly so. But I'm doing a lot of pro panel these days. And so it's kind of one of those things where if you fuck up the pro panel at the beginning, the further down the line you go, the further the bigger the fuck up, and then your pro panel's fucked. So anyway, so I mean, this has been going on for God, for 14 years. And I never want to, you know, make people mad or whatever, but I had always thought that his anger was so dumb. Like, I don't know. Like, when he works in the house, he'll bring out the tools and the dogs will like slink away. And then all, cause he gets pissed off at whatever fucking pipe or like whatever. And I'm not sure if that's anger or frustration. I do have a little bit of, I think I lump multiple emotions in with anger. But anyway, so I recognize that as being a judgment that, or just like very dismissive of him to think that he's being dumb for being angry. But literally right before he left, he said, he's like, I have faith in you that you can become a cleaner person and become an organized person. And I deeply want that for myself. Like, I deeply do. And I feel like after 14 years of faking it, and, you know, and I've cut alcohol out and I am kind of now dealing with all that shit, I just had to come, quote unquote, clean and just be like, I don't know how to fucking do this. I don't know how to do this. And so he said that he had faith in me and that he just feels like it's really disrespectful and that he kind of doesn't matter or whatever. And since I've been out here and he's been at the house, he has come to the realization that like 30% of his stress at his job is due to me being like a wing, like just not being able to be an organized, like clean person. But I really want that too. And I told him, I said, you know, if there was like a fucking like retreat to like learn how to do this shit, like I would be totally down. And like I had to really just tell him, I'm like, look, I'm gonna have to like put, he's like, you just take half an hour after you do something and you just clean it up and you just fucking take a minute and do it. And I'm gonna have to set like an alarm or a timer or something. So anyway, so yeah, so I just think it's interesting when you marry something that is so from a long time ago. You know, I don't know. And I also am not close to touching anger yet. I just don't I'm not even close. I'm still working on the addicted to chaos thing. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.
First, I have to share this off topic thing that just happened during this meeting. I got a text that a person I've worked with for 5 years passed away. And I don't know her super well, but we're definitely friends. It doesn't feel real yet because it happened like 30 minutes ago and I had the share I wanted to give. So I'm going to do that by compartmentalizing that news I just got. Yeah, I really appreciate the topic. And Andrea, when you were reading like what ChatGPT said about you didn't get angry because you perceived that you weren't worthy of protection, that just like hit the nail on the head for what I've been working on with like thinking about my mom, who just like didn't protect me at all and didn't stick up for me and was sort of baffled a few months ago when I pointed all that out, like just didn't even seem to think that that was a thing she should have done. There was no like recognition. So I think I have a lot of anger about that. That's like really old. Like I think of like my inner 4-year-old, my inner 7-year-old, like little versions of me, you know, those neural pathways were formed when I was really young and like didn't have a lot of words or context, just like some big, big feelings. And I feel confident that there is like a physical element, like I have to express some of this. And I shared that I've been going to these like plate breaking therapy sessions, which are really cool. And then I'm actually going to a rage room today after this meeting, which is going to be weird because now I have this other news to think about. But I also tried going to a batting cage, and I put this in the chat somewhere, but like turns out you have to have some skill to use a batting cage, and I was really bad. Like I hit 3 out of 35 pitches. So, but I still have this feeling that there's like something about swinging a bat that my inner children really want to do. When I got divorced, I had these like fantasies of just destroying my ex-husband's car with a baseball bat. That would have been incredible. So I think I like some of this anger needs to get out in the form of baseball. So I bought a baseball tee, like for children, and some baseballs and a bat. And I have a very sporty friend who offered to play fetch where I would hit the balls and she would go get them. So we're going to try to do that sometime soon because I need the child version of a batting cage to express that anger. Yeah, I'll report back. Thanks for all these shares. And yeah, appreciate you all.
So you've done inner child work, but have you really? I thought I did until my abandonment wounds came back and completely kicked my ass. So shit shows, I want to hit you with 3 quick truth bombs about inner child work that I've come to learn the hard way. Okay, so 1, you can't reparent yourself from the neck up. You can't think your way into safety. If your body still feels tense, reactive, or numb, that's your inner child telling you the work hasn't reached them yet. 2, talking to your inner child isn't enough. You have to feel what they felt. And 3, reparenting has to be somatic to actually work. Safety isn't something you say, it's something you practice. And that is what breathwork gives us, a felt sense of safety the younger you never got to experience. And that is exactly why I'm offering Breathe to Heal, a somatic journey to reclaim your inner child. It is a 6-week course starting on August 13th, run by fellow shit show and somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, where we are combining breathwork, somatic practices, parts work, and community healing at the steal of the cost of most somatic courses, let me add. Spots are limited. Don't sleep on this shit. Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. Trust me, this is the work that actually works.